Hey guys, welcome to Bang Broadcast, episode number 557. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
And I'm Paul.
And we're a weekly podcast that comes to you in three ways.
The first being The Week in Geek, bringing the top geek stories of the past week. Next is The List, the comic books that we are looking forward to coming out April 3rd, 2024.
We follow it up with our weekly rotating main topic, and this week it's time for our March 2024 look back. We're going to be talking about some of the comic books that we read this month, last month, by the time you hear this.
Yeah.
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 I just realized nothing that my news story is going to be out of date by the time we talk about it, but that's fine.
It's okay. Everything we talk about, stuff that's happened in the past.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know what I did in the past?
Drink.
Yeah, and you know what I'm doing in the present?
Drinking.
Drinking. That's how we conjugate verbs, people. And John, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking from Jack's Abbey, their coffee house, Hell's Lager with coffee. And this is their normal house lager brewed with coffee, and it has a nice coffiness to it. It's a nice drinking beer. It's nothing that super wows me. It's not like this is the greatest beer ever, but it is very enjoyable.
Thanks. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about mine, too. All the beers that I'm having tonight are coming out of the Victory Hop Supply IPA Mixed Pack. And I'm starting off with the Brotherly Love Hazy IPA at 6% ABV. This isn't bad either. Like, this is a nice light drinkable IPA. It's something akin to like a Founders All Day. Like, it's light enough, it's bright, kind of sweet, pretty crushable. I would consider this a session for someone like us who drinks a lot of higher ABV stuff, or like 6%. You see that, you're like, oh, that's nothing. So it's a little bit fuller flavor than a session, because obviously it's not, but yeah, it's not bad. Paul?
I'm drinking a beer that I think is pretty good, and this is a this is Totality Black Lager, brewed by Robach in collaboration with Three Heads Brewing and Strange Bird, and this is their Black Lager. It's a Czech style Black Lager, and this is to celebrate Rochester being in the path of totality in the 2024 eclipse, and this is big, rich maltiness up front. Exactly what you want. But then, you know, it just like smooths out, evens out to that like a very easy drinking lager. So it's pretty good. I'm enjoying it. I think it has big upfront flavor, a little bit ghosty on the back end, but that rich malt sticks with you.
It's meant to mirror the eclipse, where swoops in and then it fades away. So it's like like the beer.
After like 4 minutes, though. So.
So that beer is the one that is like the eclipse beer. And then, what is it? Three Heads brewed like a golden stout or a wheat beer that is like the leading up to the eclipse. And then Strange Bird, brewed another beer that is like the moon passing the sun kind of eclipse. Hmm. So the tail end of the eclipse. So you have like the sun starting to get covered, sun covered, totality. And then the one leaving. So not that they're meant to drink in unison, but that was the thing that those three breweries partnered up to do with that.
Oh, I'm going to have to look for that then.
Don't worry. We didn't get the other two.
Oh,
if you lived in Rochester, you got it.
Will I be in Rochester this week? I'm not. I don't think I will be, but who knows?
Not me.
Paul, you look like Mo Rocca today.
Oh, thank you. You know what? I'm definitely send in this video for consideration to be part of 60 Minutes or whatever Sunday mornings or whatever.
Sunday morning, whatever it's on.
Yeah.
I'm glad you see it too, Chris.
Susie said that. I'm like, yeah.
Because like normally doesn't have his like hair parted to the side, and it's like it's got a lot of body and it's swooping over.
It's swooped.
Yeah. Well, let's swoop in to the Week in Geek, where we can talk about some of the news. Because Paul, You had some stuff that you said it's out of date.
Yeah. Tomorrow, I guess it's going to end like before you get everybody listens to this. But the Empire State Building had a little bit of a takeover by Disney and Star Wars. They were doing a projection show on the actual Empire State Building as part of Disney's new Imperial March celebration, celebrating Star Wars villains. They were doing a big projection show on the Empire State Building, and also inside the Empire State Building, they had a specialty store opened up, so you could buy a bunch of Imperial March merchandise. So I thought it was pretty cool. I saw the YouTube video the Empire State and Disney put out, a video of the projection so on the building, and I thought it looked pretty cool. I was like, all right.
They had I was going to say, did you see the one with Hayden Christensen seeing it for the first time?
I saw him like pushing up the lever to start it. I didn't see him. I didn't watch his reaction video though.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Did he enjoy it?
Yeah. He was like, that's really cool. Because as a guy who took so much hate for so long and now people have kind of come around on him again, he's like happy about that part of his life now.
What's funny, like I've seen him at like I haven't seen him personally, but I watch the live streams of Star Wars Celebration, and he's been to the past two of them, I think, and the amount of love he gets there, and he seems to really enjoy being part of Star Wars now.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people involved in the movies are liked and appreciated, and I mean, yes, there's always going to be a subsection of fans that hate people for stupid reasons, but I think the majority of people understand, like, no, he's just a guy that played a role in the movie. Like, any misgivings you have about that movie don't necessarily lay on him when it comes down to, like, the writing and the directing of it. People know.
Mm-hmm. Ahmad Best, you know, is now coming around. He was not Quinlan Voss. What was his?
Kelleran Beck.
Heller and back, you know, from the Trials of the Jedi.
If that also, was like a Star Wars like trivia night thing, I would know that one. Very good.
I'm excited for Star Wars. I'm going to be buying tickets to see The Phantom Menace back in theaters when it opens up on May 4th. So
really,
yeah, I'm trying to decide what Kate. I have the day off on the Friday, which is May 3rd. I was going to go then, because that's when it actually opens. But Kate's like, well, let's do stuff he can't do on the weekend. And I'm like, yeah, but we don't go to the movie theaters anyways. So she's like, well, we can do that on Saturday. And I'm like, or we can do it on Friday. But yeah, I don't know. But I'm definitely going to see it.
Now, did you see it originally in theaters when it released? Okay.
Yeah. Back in 99, 97. When was it?
My aunt came
99, I think.
Yeah, 99.
Got me out of school early.
Nice. We went, saw
it in the My mom took me to the midnight premiere of it, so I got to skip school the next day, which was cool.
I went to the Thursday night premiere of Godzilla X Kong the other day.
Ooh. Questions about
the
that.
The X is actually silent. That's not a thing. That's something that the director has said.
It's Gorilla, Godzilla, Ten Kong.
When we were in line to get into Phantom Menace, I made probably like one of my best jokes ever, because I said like, "Oh, there's a lot of people here to see Doug's first movie," and the people around us laughed, and I was like, "Nailed it," because that was also coming out the same day. Everyone,
did Doug ever get a second movie?
No, because I think that's when they shuffled it off to one Saturday morning, and then Disney was like, let him die.
Yeah, it went from like Nickelodeon to ABC, right? Like they tried to do that, and it was like, doesn't work.
But how was Godzilla?
It was a lot of fun. It was good.
Cross Kong.
A lot of good action.
I love those movies. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. They cut, like, all the human stuff that goes on is all, like, kind of fun, and there's no like whiny annoying people like the other ones. Like I was really happy Millie Bobby Brown wasn't in it to be annoying. Not that she's annoying, but her character was annoying, yeah. And her sad dad and all that. So they were kind of cut. They introduced like a new character who was a lot of fun. So yeah,
it's good. I look forward to it. Someone else I'm looking forward to, and this may have been announced as part of the Imperial March, we got our first look at Star Wars The Acolyte. We got posters, we got a teaser trailer, set in the High Republic time frame. This looks dope. I'm really excited for this. This looks really cool.
Yeah, it does look really good. And a lot of good actors in it, too. But I was like, oh, they're in this? Oh, this is the guy from Squid Games. Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Guy from The Good Place, Carrie Ann Moss is in it. Yeah, I'm excited for this, especially now that reading The Rising Storm has rekindled that love of the High Republic. I'm all in.
Just remember, it's taking place like 150 years after those books and 100 years before The Phantom Menace.
But that's okay, because, you know, I still have to read the Phase 2 stuff, which takes place like 150 years before Phase 1. So you know what? They can jump around all they want, because by the time I get to it, it won't matter.
I've been reading a ton of Star Wars books. I'm almost done with Phasma. Finished up Dooku, Jedi Lost. Did you know inside the temple or the library of the Jedi temple that the busts of the Jedi found there aren't of dead Jedi? It's the Jedi that left the order.
Either really?
Went to the dark side or left the order because they were upset with things. Like, and they were called lost.
Interesting. If you want to hear more about Star Wars, The High Republic, listen to the last episode that we posted. It was Word Books with Friends, episode number 22, where Paul and I talk about The Rising Storm by Kevin Scott. And now that John's back, I can talk about the next news story I have, because I'm sure Paul didn't watch this, and I'm hoping John did. But we got our first trailer for Alien Romulus, the upcoming Fede Alvarez Aliens movie. John has not watched this.
I did not. Wait, is this the one with what's his name who played Angel in X3? What's his name?
I don't know if he
went with Angel, and I'm like, oh, Borealis.
No, that's where I was going on. I thought you were going like Angel Borealis.
David Boreanaz.
Nope, that was a different thing that I saw.
No, this is actually the sister ship to the Nostromo. So it takes place kind of in the same time frame, kind of more going back to the basics of Alien. Fede Alvarez also did the Evil Dead remake from like 2010, 2011, not Evil Dead Rise, but like the last like reboot version of it, which I absolutely loved, love that. But yeah, John's watching it now. I think it looks amazing. I have not seen or cared about an Aliens movie in forever, but this one's hitting right.
Ooh.
Says ooh.
Yeah, this looks really good. Yeah. I've not even halfway through it.
Trailer you might have watched, and Paul might have seen this one. We got our first looks at Beetlejuice. It's the upcoming trailer for Beetlejuice, with Winona Ryder coming back. We have Michael Keaton back, and now Jenna Ortega appearing as Lydia Deetz's teenage daughter. It looks fun. I'm not a huge Beetlejuice fan. I do enjoy that movie. I'll probably go see this one because Yanni really likes Beetlejuice. Like, we have, oh, I can't see it, but on our spooky shelf, she has like a Beetlejuice Funko somewhere, and she's got like a Beetlejuice print. Someone got her. It looks like a Beetlejuice movie.
Yeah. I'm interested in watching it. It's not something that I'm going to kick down doors, but if Caitlin was like, hey, you want to go see it? I'd be like, yeah, let's go. If she was like, oh, you want to go to the movies? Is there something playing? And that was the only thing playing, I would go see it. I think it would be more fun to be like Halloween, like week, spooky outside, turn the lights off and watch it then, like at home.
What? What if you were just doing something and then someone said your name three times outside the movie theater and then you like just appeared there? Would you see it then?
I guess because I was summoned there, wasn't I? Get, you know,
them's the rules.
Yeah.
Paul, your thoughts on Beetlejuice? Because I could see it being something that you weren't allowed to watch as a kid because it's very gross. And I mean, it's a little
risky. We watched it.
Really? That was, yeah, okay.
It was a family. It was one of the movies that we probably rented from Blockbuster and saw like once or twice. Like,
okay.
It wasn't, yeah, it was gross, but it was all like claymation kind of things. So it wasn't like that crazy. Like, there was no gore to it.
Yeah.
It was weird and freakish, but not gory. I know it looks fun. I have a way too early, or maybe I haven't read any synopsis. Maybe this is the actual synopsis, or maybe not. But my theory is from watching.
Oh my God! Get ready, everybody.
Is Wednesday Adams, Jenna Ortega, she goes into the bridge, so she's dead, and also what's her name? The mother from Home Alone.
Catherine O'Hara.
Catherine O'Hara's character. She's also dead. And, you know, that's why we see a funeral happening. And they're there as spirits. Winona Ryder's character then seeks out Beetlejuice in order to, because she's actually trying to contact her daughter that's now on the other side. And Catherine O'Hara's there kind of as a guide for Jenna Ortega.
So, Paul,
and then they get
most of the time when you're like, this is what I think the movie's going to be about, and it's like ludicrous and wrong, or you're like, I didn't like that move, and you're like, why? And you're like, because I thought it was going to be this, and you state something that is like insane, and we're like, where does this guy come up with this? What you just said now about Beetlejuice 2 makes sense. Oh, it's good, Paul. It's good. I was expecting you to say something that I'd be like, what is it with this guy? But no, Paul. You hit it. I think you might be on to something.
We didn't talk about it, but when I searched Beetlejuice, this came up also as like people also search for. We also got the first trailer for The Crow.
Oh, yeah.
Update, which actually looks kind of cool.
I have not seen that movie.
What do you think The Crow 2 is? Well, it's not The Crow 2, but it's just, you know, a relaunch of The Crow.
It's Catherine O'Hara.
Okay, see, this is what John was expecting from the first
one. And she actually is a woman that can talk to the crows. And it's the crowning. The crows have eyes.
Yes.
What for? Crowing. Yeah, that's what it's about.
I've seen a lot of people like being angry about this movie and like, oh, Jason Lee, I can't believe they're doing this. The director came out to say like, oh, I can't believe this. And I'm like, there's been so many crow movies that are awful. And this one looks reminiscent of the original story, which it's not like The Crow was an original story. It was based off of a comic book. They've done the same thing. They've taken those elements and they're made it their own, that it's different enough that it's not just the same retelling as the Brandon Lee one, that this could be just another story in the Crowverse, you know? And I think that's fine. It's good. It has its own look. I like how they've kind of did Bill Skarsgård in it. Like, he's got a couple movies coming out this year that I'm like,
dude, that guy's in everything right now.
He's the
guava of actors.
Boy Kills World looks really good.
Yanni wants to actually go see that one.
He saw the trailer when
we went to see
Dune.
Demon Slayer.
That's his dad. His dad's in Dune.
Oh, okay. I don't know who Bill Skarsgård is.
He was Pennywise. He's a murder clown. Yeah.
He is a murder
clown. That's not a murder clown. He's actually an interdimensional alien that's also a demon. I don't get it.
Yes. But he's also going to be a Nosferatu this year
That one kind of intrigues me. I'm also, not to have this become a movie fix, I'm also kind of interested in that other vampire, Abigail.
Yeah, that looks good.
That one looks kind of cool, too. Hey, you know what? On the docket for World Dracula Day, I was thinking, I don't know what we could do for this, but I like it as an idea. But hey, we got a lot of vampire stuff coming out. So, you know, just talk shit about vampires.
Sounds good.
John, you didn't have anything, did you? We didn't
ask you. You know, the only thing I had was Louis Gossett Jr. passing away.
That's true.
And yeah, someone who's always, he's been in tons of movies. Iron Eagle. He was in Jaws 3D. My favorite is Enemy Mine. He was in that. Like, always a cool dude.
Cool guy. John, I think you're a cool guy.
Hey!
Did you grab another beer?
I did.
I know you did, because I saw you get up to get it. And we're like, oh.
And then, cool. And then you watched we'll me dwell. Crack it and drink it.
What do you got now? Because I can get into my next one.
I am drinking from Drowned Lands. Brewery. This is their Green Yield Hazy IPA, coming in at 7.2%. And this is a newer brewery that's really just kind of gotten into our area. And I've really have liked their previous beers that I've had. One of their salesmen, my salesman for the distributor, gave me a can at Christmas time of one of their double IPAs. And my Christmas meal, I drank it with my prime rib. And I was like, man, this beer is good. I can't wait to get more of their beers in. And every week I've been able to get a case to two cases of a different beer from them. So I have this IPA and a double IPA to after this, but this IPA is good. It's light, easy drinking, good flavor there, but it's like super crushable. Like, I'm halfway through this can and it's just going down too easy. But yeah, it's nice. They're out of Warwick, New York. Okay. And they got cool, like, they have cool like can art.
Mm. Oh, that kind of looks like the Deadbirds cans, actually.
So, yeah, everything has something to do with, like, cultivating from the land. So this has got, like, a hand with a tree and a farmland with rain. And this is called Green Yield. The one I had Christmas time was called, like, Clay Soil, like, we got different, all land themed.
Interesting.
But Chris, you got victory themed.
I have victory themed from Pennsylvania. When I got this sampler pack, this was actually the first beer that I pulled out of it because I'm like, I'm probably not going to like this one, but let me give it a shot. And this is the Juicy Monkey Hazy Imperial IPA, 9.5% ABV, and this is a fruit punch IPA. So this is kind of like the
Juice Jolt from New Belgium.
New Belgium, like the Fruit Force. I like Juice Jolt. Juice Jolt, I think, is like my favorite of the fruit punch IPAs. Everything else, I always equate it to if you had an IPA, drank it, and then you use that same glass and you put your Hawaiian punch in it and take a swig out of it. And this is definitely that same flavor profile. It's not for me. I know there's probably people out there that like this. I don't hate it. There's no disdain for it, but just it's not what I want. Like, you can do bright tropical fruity IPAs without having it taste like imitation fruit punch. Like, there's ways to actually get that fruit flavor in there, like from actual like fruit or from like the hops that you're using. This just tastes like you added some packets of Kool-Aid to an IPA and you're like, all right, let's see how it goes.
That sounds like something we should try. That's it.
Do we want to? We can all try to buy the same IPA and then we can just get like some of the Kool-Aid mix.
Yeah, because they still sell it in packets, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if they do packets or if it just like comes in that like plastic canister.
They still sell the packets.
I would buy like a small canister for science reasons because like we would probably just drink it anyways. Yeah. All right, well let's put that in the notes. That's something we can do at some point.
Yeah,
that's a thing that can happen.
Just gotta figure out the IPA.
I'm still drinking my first beer. I only got two beers tonight, and we got a lot to talk about. So, you know, and tomorrow I gotta wake up early, get the Easter going, get the ham in the oven.
Gotta chase those bunnies out of the.
Yep.
They're just fornicating on the lawn.
Gotta hide the Easter baskets. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what you're looking forward to do tomorrow, which is actually Easter Sunday. So happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
In the past, for the time this episode does come out. John, I'm not looking forward to what you're doing on Sunday. What are you picking up on Wednesday? Today, when this episode drops.
Hey, I will be picking up from one of my boys, Colin Bunn. He is putting out a second volume of Godzilla versus the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I have the first one in trade, but this is Godzilla versus the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 2, number 1. And last time there was a Rita Repulsive did a time shift and the Power Rangers and her slid out of their world and into Godzilla's world, where the weird aliens that are always trying to take over Earth and Godzilla ends up beating them, partner up with Rita Repulsive, and she's using her people and turning them into big creatures for Godzilla to fight. Godzilla's beating them. They're bringing in Angris and King Ghidorah, and Godzilla's fighting them. And then the Power Rangers show up. He beats them up, almost destroys their Zords. But then they have to they recharge. They get back in their Zords, and they're like, hey, Godzilla, we're friends. And they fight together to beat the bad guys. And then they slip back into their world. But this is a sequel to that. So we're going to see what's going to happen. Is Godzilla... Oh, it's Space Godzilla. So they're going to have to fight Space Godzilla with Godzilla.
I was really hoping that Godzilla would have shown up. The Green Ranger would have played his flute. The Dragon Sword would have showed up. And then they would have had a weird, like, mirror thing. Like, oh, are you me? Am I you? What's going on? You know?
Oh, I'm going to go one better, where the Dragon Sword armor snaps onto Godzilla.
Oh!
Ooh.
That would be cool. They do have that. It happens a little bit later. But Tommy is taken by Rita Repulsive, and he's stuck on the spaceship. And he doesn't have his little power thing to turn into the Power Ranger, and he doesn't have his dagger, but he escapes and beats everybody up because he's Tommy and he's super cool.
Badass, yeah.
And then gets off of that spaceship and like jumps off the spaceship, and as he's falling, he's like turns into the Green Ranger and lands. It's pretty badass.
And I had a lot of Morphin Matrix, isn't it? A Morphin Matrix with the
Matrix, yeah. Is this something that you're reading with your son?
The first volume was bought for Grayson because he got really into watching Power Rangers with my dad, and he loves Godzilla. That my dad saw that like on Amazon.
How does your dad feel about everything that's happening with Quiet on the Set? Is your dad like in shock? He says like, I used to watch iCarly.
I don't know.
I'm an enabler.
You know, I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it.
I just think this goes to show whatever Paul likes is to be problematic.
Probably. Probably. But didn't we learn a lot of those accusations?
Paul, are we going to see your name on one of the manifests for FC9?
I hope not.
They told me I want a trip. They told me I want a trip.
I was going to meet iCarly. I was just going to be an extra, guys. But what was I going to say? But the Jenny McCurdy book, I'm Glad My Mom Is Dead, weren't a lot of those accusations in that book as well?
Yeah.
I didn't read that.
I do want to read it.
I believe there was a lot of stuff about Dan Snyder, and I think her book helped kick off them doing this documentary. Mm-hmm. And as weird as Corey Feldman is, he's been touting this stuff for years, saying how awful it is and you shouldn't put your kids in there, and these people are doing this and been doing it forever. And even there was like there was a thing that came out that Shirley Temple said stuff too back then, that when she was little, like, people were, it was bad. So yeah,
I'm not saying this to like demean or like belittle anything from Shirley Temple. Like, I've never seen a Shirley Temple movie. The only thing I know about her is she has like the non-alcoholic like Sprite and cherry juice drink named after her.
Yeah.
I don't know anything else.
So she's a huge star as a child.
7-Up, grenadine, and maybe some maraschino cherry juice. You know, it depends on, it's different everywhere you go.
It kind of depends on what they have behind the bar, probably. Yeah. But kind of like circling back on, this is something that I saw available to watch on, I don't remember if it was on Max or Prime or something. And I was like, it's supposed to be really interesting, but also like, it just seems icky and I don't want to sit there and watch that. Like, that's not something that I want to put on to decompress after I get home from work or anything. Like, I don't think I can sit down and watch it.
There was an interview with Kean Thompson, he's on Saturday Night Live now, and he was on All That. Like, and he came out to be like, I was a kid. I didn't hang out a lot on the sets. Like, I had like other things that I was like, I show up, I do that. Like, I actually went to school. I did that. So he wasn't there, and he's like, Nickelodeon, keep looking into this. Look, like, why? Like, I never really realized any of this was happening. I wish in some way I had known so I could have told people. But he's like, I had a good time. Like,
Melissa Joan Hart had a similar thing that she put up, because I guess it's one of those things where, you know, she's still active, like she's acting and things, like she's like a producer on stuff now. People know her from Clarissa Explains It All, and like, people are reaching out to her like, what do you know, tell your stories. And she was like, same thing. I was like, I had a great time. Like, everyone that I worked with was super supportive and friendly and respectful. Like, it's not like a problem on any of the things that I worked on. And but that's also like 10-15 years before,
like,
I want to say like that newer school of Nickelodeon stuff.
Well, it was like,
but that was also like 20 years ago now from where we are in time, because that's after I had aged out of that stuff. Like, I wasn't into iCarly, Victorious, Drake and Josh was the other big one.
But that was all Dan Snyder's, like, he was the one behind it all, his production studio. So
And he didn't come on to like All That, and I only watched a little bit of All That.
And I remember watching it, but I don't remember.
I like the grandfather in the motorized Lazy Boy. That was probably my favorite.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You don't remember that sketch or that character?
I remember Lori Beth Denberg doing like their news segment or whatever, and just being like over everything. But yeah, my Nickelodeon watching ended with probably like Pete and Pete and Rocco's Modern Life. Because even like the next batch of cartoons after that, like Angry Beavers and Cat Dog, I didn't watch that. Like, I have no affinity or nostalgia for it.
We'd watch Ren and Stimpy as the lead in, or it either led into or followed like Are You Afraid of the Dark? And then I got a little bit older, and then our Saturday nights weren't watching that. We were watching
Adult Mystery Swim.
Science. Yeah, well, we were watching Mystery Science Theater 3000 every Saturday night.
Yeah.
We'd order pizza.
I'll probably watch it at some point, but I'm not It's not something I'm looking forward it's, to watching.
I'm more interested in clicking the articles to see what people are saying about it than actually sitting through and watching the whole thing. And
I also, did see...
it's not available to me, so I'm not going to...
I did see a YouTube video where it's like, oh, this is all the creepy stuff that was in some of those shows. And like halfway through the video, I was like, I can't watch this anymore.
It was like some of this because I started watching the first episode is like a 6-part thing, I think. I started
realize it was a series. I thought it was just like a documentary.
I think it's a docuseries. It's got a couple episodes into it. But I started watching it because I'd been waiting. My wife loves watching documentaries, so I've been waiting to watch it with her. And the other day I came downstairs from putting Grace into bed and my wife and my mother-in-law were watching it. And I was like, what the hell? I've been waiting to watch this with you. I could have watched this anytime. I was waiting for you. So they're like, well, catch up. So I started watching the first episode the other day. And it is, it's like there's stuff that they show that it's like, no, I don't think that's innocent. Like the one kid who was playing like a superhero, and he's like, I didn't like playing superheroes. They always had us playing superheroes. I hated being in the tights. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I was a superhero called the Nose, and they gave me like a prosthetic nose. I had like a nose on my chest, and then I had two noses on my each shoulder. And like I would like sneeze on people, and they show it, and like somebody's like, nobody said anything that the noses on his shoulders look like dicks, and it's like, yep, that looks like a dick and balls, and it's like, oh yeah, the picture on his chest looks like that, and then he would constantly sneeze in people's faces, mm-hmm. and the way like it just looked like cum shots, and they were like, and that's what they said. It was like. Basically, they got away with this kid with dicks on his shoulders cum shotting on people. And, like, they showed, like, and it's not just that. It happened all the time. And they different times that they were doing that stuff. And they show the one who's a.
I'm looking at the wrong thing because me searching Nickelodeon the Nose is just bringing up, like, Double Dare.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the giant nose that.
It was an all that skit. And then they showed, what is it? Andrea Grande,
Ariana Grande as in Victorious, like where she plays like a infantile, like
she seems like she's supposed to be like a dumb
airhead kid. And then she like has this weird obsession totally with like dicks. Putting her feet in her mouth.
Yeah, well, not only that, but they have like, oh, I wonder if you could get juice from a potato, and she's got this long
that's
potato.
Where I turned the video off.
Uh-huh. And she's like, it looks like she's giving it like a hand job, and she's grunting while doing it. Uh-huh. And then she gets shot by potato juice in the face. Like,
yeah,
it's like, I was too old to watch those shows, but I just was like, what is going on?
Well, anytime in a kid show, like they're wearing like, swimming outfits, and it's like a two-piece bikini. I'm like, what? Why? Why? Yeah. Why? You don't need to be in a one piece. Like this scene doesn't. And most of the time, the scene doesn't even need to happen because they're not even in the pool. It's like them going to the pool, and then you're at the next scene. So it's like, just put on a towel.
I've been watching the Chippendale Park Life with my son.
Those are cute.
They're cute. They're fun. But there is stuff in there that are like parent kind of jokes that like, well, my kid doesn't get this. It's way beyond him. And there is like a lot of weird stuff that I'm like, are Chip and Dale a couple in this? Because I'm pretty sure they're a couple in that show. They sleep
couple
in the same.
Chipmunks.
And it's not that there's anything.
But it's been like a year since I watched it. So.
But yeah, I'm watching every episode constantly. But, like, they sleep in the same bed, they nuzzle, and kind of give each other, like, Eskimo kisses and stuff. Like, they're definitely a couple.
Okay, well, if that's your definition, then we're a couple whenever we go to a convention together.
A couple of besties.
Yeah.
Paul, what's the book you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to.
I totally forgot that we were recording and we were just having a bullshit conversation that we have.
Scooby-Doo, where are you? Number 127. And I'm picking this up because there's really nothing I'm interested in coming that is coming out this week. But it looks like Scooby and the gang are going up against the Predator, which just seems fun.
Apropos, talking about flying on the set.
Yep. Yep. Way to Chris, set it up, Chris. Good job.
Chris, what are you looking forward to?
Much like Paul, this is a very light week for me. I only have two books coming out, and they're both books that I just buy monthly anyway. So I was trying to see if there was anything new coming out that I was like, oh, let me pick this up. No, there's not. So this might be a week where I just don't go to the comic book store and buy these two issues next time. But Birds of Prey number 8, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Javier Pina. Vixen's officially joining the Birds of Prey. After the first arc, we have Zealot and Harley Quinn jumping off the book. So now they're bringing in Barbara Gordon as more of a primary role. And now Vixen's coming on board, too. I really like this book. This is kind of hitting me in the same way like the Matt Fraction stuff did. Like Hawkeye and Immortal Iron Fist, where it's just great versions of these characters. I'm really digging it. I think it's a great book. And if you're a fan of any of the characters that are in here, so like your Cassandra Cain Batgirl, your Big Barda, if you're like the one Vixen fan that's out there, but Barbara Gordon, Black Canary, like if you like any of these characters, like definitely check it out. Birds of Prey is like a very solid read. And I had a lot of fun with that first arc, so I'm looking forward to the second one here.
John?
Yeah?
He started with it.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, my goodness. Godzilla. Yeah. Versus Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I'm with John. I totally forgot we were having recording. But
hey,
there we are.
It's okay, Paul. You know what? Sometimes we get lost in the sauce a little bit, and we're so busy like talking about what we're going to read, we forget. We have to read something right now.
We do.
And now, a dramatic reading from Star Wars, The Hidden Empire, number 1, page 22, panel 14.
It doesn't matter if I live!
That was a dramatic reading from Star Wars, The Hidden Empire, number 1, page 22, panel 14. I'm still, like, bewildered that you knew this. Like, oh, this is Kira.
But you didn't know Remy the other week.
I literally thought I was going to have to, like, oh, this is, you know, Kira, like... She's trying to, like, get control, like, the Black Sun thing or whatever.
Crimson Dawn.
Crimson Dawn, that's it.
Yeah,
I...
Sometimes you're able to pull Quinlan back out of your head space.
Yeah, you know.
And I'm able to recognize Kira wherever she goes. I'm also very deep in Star Wars right now, so...
Star Wars is weird. Like, there's too much content, but somehow still not enough? I don't know, man. John, so you have a can in hand.
Yeah.
What you got, bud?
So another beer from Drowned Lands. This is their Deep Terra Double IPA 8.2. And this is really easy drinking. Citra, Mosaic, Cashmere hops in this. And they all work really well. Super, super easy drinking IPA, great flavor, and crushable. Like, I could down this in like 3 big gulps. Like, just super easy drinking. Yeah, it's good. I look forward to being able to bring you some of these cans. Maybe, Chris. I don't know if we're traveling with two kids. I might not be able to smuggle some beer down to you. So
it's
if
okay.
I can, I will.
I've already said I'm hoping to try to get you some beers from Dead Words before they close. They'll be closing officially on April 14th. I'm going to try to get in there to pick some stuff up. Like we love that place. That's Yanni's favorite brewery. So she's kind of heartbroken. That's closing down. they've already said, like, it's their goal just to, like, drain all the kegs before they go. Like, they've already said they're going to be bringing in kegs of other local Orlando breweries, too. So even if they're out of something, they still want you to try to drink local and try some stuff from, like, other places close by. But I'm going to try to get you some Deadwoods beers. If they have anything still available by the time we're able to get there.
I really hate seeing good breweries close. And I'm being somebody who sells the beer, and I talk to people in the brewery industry all the time, like, especially like after COVID, it is just a different world, and it's so hard. And like the stuff, like, you'd show like a huge list of beers that brewery is constantly brewing, because Chris would take a picture of the menu, send it to us, and then Paul and I would look at it and be like, well, I would drink this, this, and this. And Paul would say, I would drink this and this. And Chris would be
all
like,
good.
And Chris would be like, good. Well, I got one that John said, I got one that Paul said, I got this, or I got this. Mm-hmm. And it would
be all good.
They all looked amazing. And it's tough when you're doing, like, they're doing a lot of niche stuff. They weren't just brewing, sour this, hoppy this. They were brewing tons of different styles. And I was just in Louisiana, and we found a brewery that was doing the same kind of thing, like brewing styles. Like, they had a West Coast IPA on tap. That was the only IPA they had on tap. They didn't have a sour. Everything else they had was like, they were doing like historical kind of beers. So they had like a pre-prohibition Pilsner, and they had a Kassabasser German style that I had never heard of before. And it was really nice, like sweet, malty lager. They were doing milk pours, but they did like, they were doing their Dunkel on the milk pour. So they were calling it a chocolate milk. So you'd get like this nice foam on top of a Dunkel that had this nice sweet chocolatey taste to it. So it was like a cool place. But at the same time, I'm like, hey, you're tucked away in this weird Louisiana suburb, like right outside of the French Quarter, like. I'm a weird beer guy. That's why I'm here. And we sat there.
Who else is doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're the brewery that I was like, oh, I want to go here. And we found them. I was searching for breweries close to us, and that brewery didn't pop up. We went to the bagel place that it was like connected to in the like old warehouse that they were in. We went there and I was like, oh, there's a brewery over there. And then I looked them up and I was like, oh, the tap looks pretty good. And then we went back on a Monday. Like, we sat outside. We ordered like three. Me and my mother-in-law drank like three beers together sitting outside. And my wife took my kids to the playground. Like, it was win-win. But
Yanni just feels like she can't love a brewery, because the last one that she loved was Ellipsis. They've closed down. Deadwood's closing down this month. 2 years ago now, maybe a year, maybe two, we lost Dead Lizard Brewery, which was another like kind of like go-to just because it was close.
Yeah.
Solid beers.
Thin Man?
They had Bliss on the shelf when I went to my beer store. So I'm like, oh, maybe it's circling back. But Paul, brewery that we went to, not last time, but the first time you and Kate came out. Broken Strings.
Yeah.
Actually just announced that they're in danger of closing. They said they were like, they've always been kind of like close to the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Like just they're eking by. But their cooler broke last week, which is basically like shut them down for like a couple days. And now they started a GoFundMe and be like, hey, like we need help for the repairs. We need to pay our people. We want to keep brewing beers. Like, help us out with whatever you can. And like, they're 50% of the way to their goal. So I'm hopeful, because they're another like weird, like hole in the wall brewery, but like they do like cool, like different stuff. Like, Paul, the time that we went, they had there's like a violet lemonade sour.
Mm-hmm.
Every year they do a, who are you going to call? It's like a strawberry marshmallow sour. And then they always do, they're like their cherry cola sour too, which is like a cherry Coke inspired one, which is like really weird and really good at the same time. So I don't want all of the local craft breweries to close down, because I like that there's like a variety of stuff around here. And like, Cyborg literally is celebrating their 5th anniversary right now. Great for them. Like, the Orlando City Mayor like signed a proclamation like announcing today is like Cyborg Day for them. Cool. Like, mm-hmm. Awesome. But a high tide raises all boats. Like, we need more stuff that's around there to keep everybody else interested and working their best.
What's tough about like the Orlando area is you have so many people coming into that area.
Yeah.
But they don't get outside of that park area. Mm-hmm. So these places are for like Orlando residents, but if you don't capture people in your area, you're not gonna.
But even like, that was Ellipsis's thing. Like, all of their like Instagram and like Facebook posts was like, hey, if you're flying into or out of MCO, like we're 2 minutes away, mm-hmm. like come get a beer.
Yeah. But there's not many people who are traveling in there that aren't with their kids or aren't going to go like, I'm going to spend a fortune at the parks.
Yeah.
And you have to be in a different kind of world while you're traveling down there, because even you had said like, I love this brewery, but it's not a great drive to get out there, and they don't have food, so we have to either like get something on the way or do this, or you know, like, it's just Orlando is just a tough place, because even like when we went to Sidewards, and then you drive like a half hour to get to another Orlando brewery, like they're not mm-hmm. like super close, they're not like a hop, skip and a jump and away. It's like, oh, like Sidewards is like in the right spot, being in that milk district, where it's like
it services the locals, like the people cool, that live around there.
Yeah, it's the cool hipsters are all like, oh yeah, we're gonna go to Sidewards, you know. So it's
definitely, am I like, a cool hipster? We're known there, like we walk in, the bartender's like, hey guys, like
yeah. Especially with, you know, your other favorite breweries closing.
Yeah. But even, not to, like, dwell on this, like, too much longer so we can get into the main topic, but even the brewery that was on Disney property, because over at the Disney's Boardwalk Resort, they had an active brew pub, Big River Brewing and Grill. They closed a couple months ago. And, like, they literally brewed beers, like, right there. Like, last time my uncle and his wife came down, she had a day where she went to the water parks with her sister and her nephew. And like, my uncle's like, I'm not going to a water park. Like, let's go drink. I was like, there's a brewery like 5 minutes away from where you're staying. Let's go. And like, we went there. Good food, like just pub fare, good beers. And it was like, literally their thing is like, drink the beer like 50 feet away from where it's brewed. And like, literally when you're sitting at the bar, you could see like the bright tanks right behind there. Great place, but even there, like at a Disney, like not necessarily like DVC resort, but it was like a DVC resort. So like, there's people there that are going to spend the money, hang out at the resort. Like even there, like they couldn't sustain it.
Yeah, it's just, it's tough, and it's such a, Orlando is so spread out. And there's like, and it's just tough. And like Buffalo, you know, our Buffalo breweries are kind of the same thing. They're all over the place, but they're like unique enough that they're like, oh, I'm going to go to Froth, or, oh, we're downtown, let's go to Big Ditch. Let's go here. And, you know, the places that suffer are the ones that don't really do the food. They aren't like a brewery pub. Mm-hmm. That's, I know, like one of the big struggles like with Flying Bison is they opened that new facility up, but they weren't set to do food because Tim Herzog was like, no, I want people to come in, have one or two beers and leave. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's
now you want the people there. You want
people to come in, eat, order many beers, order food, and then go, oh, you know what? Oh, we just had that other round. Maybe, hey, can we get pretzels? Can we have this? Yeah. Can we get a round of pickles, please?
Well, that was something that I saw even just when I lived in Michigan for that year with Founders, where they were putting the money into like their little window that they had for the kitchen where you could get sandwiches. And now they've completely remodeled and redone that part of the tap room because it's like, no, like we need the people here sitting around, hanging out, getting like appetizers, getting sandwiches, because people will buy food if they're drinking. And if they're drinking, they're going to want to buy food. Like mm-hmm. it makes sense to invest in that kind of thing.
And if they're at a brewery buying food, they're going to drink.
They're going to keep drinking.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's, I don't know, it's tough. And I'm surprised that some breweries, I mean, breweries who were able to sell stuff that were in the market, like selling to stores, like they were super relying on stores to sell their beers because they were not having the people come into their restaurant or their pub or buy there. And if they did, it was only like they'd walk in and be like, all right, hand your card through the glass. We'll scan it, give it back to you, and here's your 6-pack or 4-pack. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's crazy. And someone who ran a beer store before COVID and after, like, it's totally different. Like, I used to be able to, somebody would be releasing a beer or somebody would be releasing something, and I'd be like, oh, that's going to sell great. People are going to love that. And now people ask me, like, how do you think that's going to do? I'm like, I have no idea. Like, the buying habits of people are so different, and so many people went to bourbon. So many people, the craft people that you would know that would come in and buy anything are not there anymore. Like, this was my worst year for Bourbon County. Like, I used to have a line that would wrap around, like, the corner. And I'd be out of all of my Bourbon County. I'd start selling at 8:00. By 10:00, I'd have nothing. And I had Bourbon County for months. Like, I finally sold the last of my Bourbon County in February.
I still had it at my beer store, not the last time they went, but like maybe like 2 visits ago. Like, they still had it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's the clientele have changed, and there's so many things, the canned cocktails, the seltzers with actually alcohol in it, and just people going to, like, so many people I've talked to, they've left craft beer and gone to bourbons because bourbon's hard to get. Oh, you got to spend a lot of money. I'll buy it super expensive second line and everything. And it's,
I'd rather just get something that's good that I don't have to like stress over.
Yeah.
Well, plus side, like, when you do come down, like, there are still a bunch of breweries here that are worth a visit. So we'll definitely check those out. But Paul, did you grab
Celery City, baby?
It'll be my first visit when you come down. Paul, did you get another beer?
Yeah, I'm drinking from Big Ditch. John, you had this last time we recorded all together, and this is the Western New York Western New York Eclipse, their black IPA. And this is 6.2% alcohol by volume, I believe. And like John said, it's easy drinking. It's like kids first black IPA. It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not beer made for everybody. They knew that people were going to flock to this beer and buy it because it comes with glasses. It's an eclipse beer. I sold 20 cases in less than 24 hours. Everybody's going to be buying it, and it's a black IPA for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the rep right before I left for my vacation, and he was like, what did you think about it? And I was like, it's good. I would have liked a black IPA brewed for someone who loves black IPA, so I want everything turned up on it. I want the roastiness up. I want the bitterness up, the hoppiness. And he's like, yeah, I thought the same thing. And I was like, but I get it. It's, you knew everybody in the city was going to buy it, and you made it so everybody could enjoy it. I get it. It's why, like, you go to a soup bar and you get the chili out of there, and it's not super spicy chili. It's average chili. It's something that everybody can eat.
Having such a roasty, toasty from Totality, the Robach beer, I keep on thinking, am I getting just the aftertaste from that, or is it actually got some roastiness to it? Can't tell. Because, you know, right down here in the jowls, I can reach in with my tongue and still taste the Robach one.
That sounds good, though.
I got 4 cans left of that black IPA. Like,
yeah, it's what I plan on drinking while hanging out at home, getting ready for the eclipse. Like, but the Totality one is the one that I'll enjoy.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to, I'm like, oh, you know, it's eclipse day. Hey, you know, maybe Sunday, because it comes in a 6-pack. Kate's going to might have one, but she picked up hay burner for herself for that day. So we're good.
She didn't pick up pineapple hay burner.
Ooh. She likes hay burner. That is something for me to pick up, have at home, and then her tasting it and be like, I like this. And then her asking me to keep her, save her a beer, save her 2 cans, and those 2 cans will sit like all summer.
Yeah.
And then she'll remember she has one, and then we'll drink one, and then it'll be Christmas, and then she'll drink the other.
So Big Ditch has created a new SKU. So they have like seasonal, and now they have it's called like seasonal hay burner. So every quarter you're going to get like a different hay burner. So like they put out the sleigh burner for Halloween, which was the blood orange one. So you're going to get that one in there, that SKU. You got the pineapple now. I think there's another one they're going to do for summer, and I'll have a different one for like winter.
That's also called sleigh burner, but it's a different stuff.
I'm also drinking a tropical beer.
Oh.
Not that anyone was, but the talk
is that,
of...
Is that Skidipper? What was that called?
It's called the Skipper. Oh. This is a tropical IPA, 5.8% ABV, and this one's actually exclusive to this mixed pack. This is basically everything that I liked about the Brotherly Love, where it's just like a nice, crushable, drinkable IPA, but it does have that tropical, just nice, bright fruit profile added to it as well. This is great. I don't know if it's worth buying this mixed 4-pack for this one, and then the last one that I'm going to have, which...
The Gilligan?
No, it's the Dirt Wolf. Which,
oh, yeah.
I think we had on the show, but it was like probably like 10 years ago. When it first came out. But that's just a great IPA, so I wouldn't have a lot to say about that one. But I do like that they put this out with something that you can only get in here. And it's a good variety of IPAs. That being said, I wish there was a black IPA in here, because you have like a hazy IPA, you have a tropical, you have a fruit punch one, and then you have like your imperial IPA. I'll take out like the fruit punch, give me like Cascadian Dark in there, like something a little bit that roasty toasty, just like to break it up. But again, these are all decent enough beers, some more than others, but this is kind of the problem with the IPA mix pack, where for our purposes, sitting down and drinking a bunch of them, it's like, I can only compare them to each other. Give me something a little bit different that I can be like, oh, wow, but this one stands out.
Yeah, and this, I mean, they've tried this a couple of times, Victory, and I think right now they're really trying to go after the New Belgium, because that New Belgium variety pack has still just been crushing the Ranger pack.
I will. This is
because they also
good contender, but the the New Belgium one's just going to be better.
Better. It's better because they're doing what you're saying, Chris, is like they're doing different styles within that. They have like a couple in there that you're like, oh yeah, you can't go wrong with the regular Ranger IPA. You can't go wrong with the hazy that's in it this time. Oh, it's the experimental and it's their cashmere. Oh, it's all cashmere hops. Oh, this is good. Oh, the next pack is this.
It's like
and
a
it's
cold
like,
IPA.
Oh,
like something.
Yeah, it's a cold IPA. It's different enough. And these other breweries just don't seem to get what it is that is working in that box. And Victory also put out, they've done it before, but now they've really gone hard at the monkey box. Where you get
that one too.
Yeah. You get golden monkey, sour monkey, berry monkey that's sour, and then it might be tropical monkey again in that. Or citrus monkey, which is a wheat beer. But like that box, not bad for the price point at like $19.99 when you get three 10% beers in it and then a wheat beer. But
am I going to be sitting there and drinking like, oh, let me grab another
sour monkey.
Strong golden. Like,
yeah. So, yeah, it's for the price point and the beers that you get in it, it's like worth it if you're looking to have a bunch of high percent beers. But I don't know who's going to be going like, oh, hey, I'm going to drink. That pack is not a fridge filler for me.
Yeah,
but like
this is something I grabbed to be like, oh, you know, I'll have beers to drink while I'm talking to Paul about a Star Wars book. And then I'll save stuff for when we actually record the podcast. And at the same time, I grabbed this. Yanni picked up the Prairie Artisan Ales. Like they have like a sour pack. They had like their slushy. There's like a pink lemonade sour in there. Like, yeah, like the sherbet one. And the other day when we were off, like, she's like, I still have like 8 beers in there. If you want to like take any of them, go for it. I'm like, well, I'll grab something, but I want something that I haven't had before. And then like I took a sip of a couple of hers that were in there. And I guess they're all sour ales, but they are all like different enough still that I'm like, oh, like I have a favorite in this one. Oh, there's one that I maybe don't like as much. But it wasn't all the exact same beer.
Yeah. And like Paul, like Second Fiddle from Fiddlehead.
Ooh, yeah.
They have 12 packs of that now for $18.99, which I'm like, that's a great price for a great beer. It's the same price as a 12 pack of just Fiddlehead IPA. But it's like both of those 12 packs are great fridge fillers.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Forgot about this until he said that. Surprisingly, I just saw Fathead when I went to my beer store. And like, that's not a brewery I've ever had down here before. Because I remember writing them off because of something that we had on the podcast like years ago. But then semi-recently, John, you were like, oh, like, no, like they're really good. So I may circle back on that. But Paul's yawning. We got comic books to talk about. No, it's okay. You're sleepy boy.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul, I'm going to leave it up to you. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start talking about X-Men books or do you want to start off with John's book?
With John's book because I feel like we read it before.
Oh, really throwing the gauntlet there.
It's a better version of what we read before.
But I don't remember what we read that was like this. And if you say, I'll be like, oh, yeah. But
I don't remember the name of the book, but it's because this book talks about a person coming to a house that they're like, oh yeah, we heard, you know, this is a writer and they wrote all the stories, and then it turns out no, the stories aren't fiction, they're true. Remember the girl that shows up to the house?
Helen of Windhorn. And that's my book from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tom King, art by Bilquis Everly.
Sure.
I think. But as Paul is saying, is this is a story told by the woman who is the caretaker of Helen as an older woman telling a journalist. Chris put a werewolf on the screen.
Spoilers.
Telling the story of taking charge of this woman, Helen, for this granddaughter of a famous writer. And when she meets her, it's like the 1920s, 1930s?
Between 1930 and 1941. Yeah. Because in 1941, she goes to the Philippines.
Somebody just read this book yep. today, and I read it.
Yeah.
Three weeks ago. Telling the story of this woman, and she's a young teenager, 16, I think she is, but she smokes. She's kind of a hard drinker. She's been on kind of the run with her father, who had just passed away, and now is being brought back to her family estate, where they have a butler that's a mansion. They're rich, and she's never really had two nickels to rub together. And the story is kind of interesting. Is she's really a tough girl. She's drinking really hard. But every night she comes into this woman who's supposed to be taking care of her bedroom and says, "There's something outside. It scares me. Can I stay with you?" And then finally she goes outside. The woman comes after her. There is something that is outside. And this barbarian dude that's her grandfather kills the beast. And it's an interesting, fun story. For a book that didn't have a lot going on till the end, I was intrigued the whole time. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the butler.
I like the caretaker lady. I feel bad. I don't remember her name.
Yeah,
like,
I can't remember.
There's that change in her where she's like, you see, because she's relaying the story to someone that's interviewing her about, like, the girl's father, who's like the writer.
Yeah.
And like, there's a moment where she's telling, like, oh, like, this girl was a wild child. Like, you can't drink, you can't smoke. And as soon as, like, she gets to the point in the story where shit's getting real, like, you see her pull out the cigarettes, and she's like, let me tell you about that night. And I'm like, okay, like, this is going to be that turning point. I really enjoyed this book. And when this issue actually came out, and we went to the comic book store, because you had picked this for your list pick for the week.
Yeah.
I told
you guys at that point, this is going to be my look back pick.
I pointed this out to Yanni. I was like, oh, like, this is the book that John's getting. Like, it sounds cool. It sounds like something you might like. And she, like, was like, I'm okay. So I'm glad that you picked it so I could now read it and be like, oh, this is really good.
But yeah, it's a team up of Tom King and Bill Quis. They were on Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. So it's they're reteaming to do this book. And the book is gorgeous.
I really liked how Supergirl looked. I think this looks better.
I think it looks better, too. I thought
I don't know if it's because I have a frame of reference, because it's in, like, stately manner. And it's a period piece. So, like, I understand how things should look. And it does a great version of adapting what, like, stately manor should look like, with a wine cellar and an armory and a library, like,
and a billiard room.
It makes sense. So I'm like, oh wow, like, yes. Because if you say, like, oh, this is Supergirl with Space Orphan, like, fighting marauders, like, okay, what's that gonna look like? It can look like anything. I'm like, all right, sure. This is just gorgeous. And it's a very intriguing read. Like, I like the framing device. I like reading it from the caretaker's, like, viewpoint, where it's like this, you know, the prim and proper goody two shoes woman is like, no, you're a young lady. You shouldn't be out this late. Like, I was like, nah, fuck that. I'm going to drink, I smoke.
You need to take me into town. I'm out of cigarettes. Like, yeah, you shouldn't be smoking.
It's 300 miles away. I can't drive. Like, Paul.
Yeah, I was trying to scroll through the books to see if I could find that other book that I... You guys remember it? It's the young woman that comes into...
We don't, Paul. We don't, okay.
But Paul, no, I've been like, I'm half in the bag. I've pounded two IPAs. You're lucky I can see straight right now.
That's true. But no, this was a fun book. It was fine. Not sure where it's going. And I like that the guy that's interviewing the woman was like, yeah, but no, do you mean, oh, she's suffering from the same like kind of demons and dreams that her father did? And she's like, no, it was an actual monster. And yeah. It was awful. And here we are.
And they even make reference to like Helen didn't live long. Like she died early in her life. And she's like, I can understand. House and she stayed with all of that, like something got her, because her grandfather was obviously writing stories, but whatever he created maybe came to life, because she even referenced like they have this big stately home and he's this writer, but she's like, oh, I would never read that trash that he wrote. I'd work for him and I'd govern.
No, that's the son. The guy that's there, the grandfather, his son ran away and was a writer.
No, the grandfather's a writer too.
I did not get that. I read it the same way Paul did.
Yeah, that the father ran away from home and was the writer, and he is better than Shakespeare, and that's what's going to say on the angel
on the tombstone.
Tombstone, and it better be gone by the next time I'm back, which it will be next year. And the grandfather has the stately manor and everything and has a ton of money, but we don't know why he has a ton of money. Maybe he's an ancient. I don't know.
Or he's plundering all of these worlds like as like a Conan type character.
Or maybe all the reasons why I come up with all these crazy ideas about what happens, John, is because I have actually kind of read and processed the book. I reiterate it to you.
So at the beginning, she's going to like the sculptor who's like made her father's tombstone. And that's where she's like, no, like make it say better than Shakespeare. Like, cause she says like, oh, I'm leaving, but I told daddy I'd come back each year to visit. But then like when Barnabas shows up, it says like, oh, and then Helen saw her grandfather finally returned. So the grandfather had been gone for a minute, but she was getting her father's estate.
So, okay. So how did you know C.K. Cole? Did you know who C.K. Cole was back then? Had you read any of his stories? Did that factor in at all of you taking the job with his father?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that was not sensible reading for me at my station. To this day, I haven't touched it. It's all trash, isn't it? So that, I think that's when I read that, C.K. Cole was the father of Helen. So just reading that, I misunderstood who the writer was.
Yes, so he's the writer. Helen's the daughter. The estate is the father's, though.
Yes. Yeah. No, I was on board with that. But I thought the father was all I had read that and thought the father was a writer at the same time. And he had made all his money from writing about stories that he was living in. But it sounds like the son was writing it stories about his father being this kind of hero and whatever.
And he never made much money on it.
And his father,
he looks like a palatial estate. So he made money.
Yeah. Whatever he did. But it seems like the father of Helen, who is C.K. Cole, his stories didn't catch on and become famous till after he was dead. And they look like a Conan the Barbarian kind of series. Mm-hmm. But then when the grandfather shows up, he's dressed in like a tunic with a cape and a shield and a sword and a severed monster's head. Mm-hmm. That he's like, welcome to my estate.
I love this book. I don't think I will pick up like subsequent issues, but if like you pick this for a trade-in policy, or if I see the trade like cheap on sale, like I would want to to read it. I mean, it's Tom King, so
I plan on continuing the series. I liked it enough that I don't have many series that I'm like, yes, I'll keep reading this. And I'd love to have that because I do love reading comics, but I haven't really had anything that's like gripped me enough. The G.I. Joe books have gotten me that I'm like, yeah, I'm reading Duke. I'm reading Cobra Commander. I'm like to read this. I continue to read. I want to say Master. It's not Masterpiece, but.
Yeah, Masterpiece.
Masterpiece.
Like the two spies.
Yeah. Masterpiece. I'm continuing on that. So I have these kind of books that I am continuing to pick up and read. And I like it because I've kind of been, I wouldn't say I've been in a funk, but I haven't had stuff that's really gripped me that I keep buying stuff outside of just buying three books a month that we pick for the look back. But I'm actually have books that I'm like, yeah, I'm into it. But I want to keep reading this. I want this story to keep happening.
And Paul, do you want this story to keep happening? Because I'm going to throw it to you. Because Paul,
yeah,
it will keep happening.
It will, yeah, without me buying it. Yeah, I'm not going to pick up the next one. I'm like, it's interesting. It was well done, well crafted for what it was, but it didn't hook me.
Yes, it's not a Paul.
It's not a Paul book. And Chris, is Ultimate X-Men a Paul book?
I don't think it is.
No, the answer is no.
I submitted this book because I actually picked up all of the Ultimate books for the relaunch outside of Ultimate Evasion. But I picked up Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Spider-Man, and then Ultimate Black Panther. And after reading all three of them, I'm like, I'm really interested in seeing where this new Ultimate universe is going. I wanted to actually submit Ultimate Spider-Man, but the book that I bought was actually like the third printing because the first issue came out 2 months ago. So I'm like, oh no, too far behind now. I can't put that out. But then Ultimate Black Panther came out after I had submitted everything. So I wasn't able to read that. So Ultimate X-Men, which Ultimate X-Men is kind of an outlier for the other books. And I think this is a really bold choice to put out as like, no, this is the Ultimate X-Men book. Like, this is your introductory X-Men book for this new version of the Ultimate Universe, written and drawn by Peach Momoko. And this is very much more Japanese ghost story than it is superhero book, where something like Ultimate Spider-Man it's Peter Parker married with kids, works at the Daily Bugle with his uncle and J. Jonah Jameson, who are quitting the company to start their own publishing initiative because the King, spoilers for a book that we're not going to talk about, but if you want to get into it, the Kingpin's like running for mayor. He's going to be taking over like publishing, and they're like, no, like we can't do what we want to do. Like, we're going to go do our own thing. But like it says up at the front of this book, the Reed Richards of the Ultimate Universe has suppressed any superheroes from coming out so he can maintain control of this version of the universe. And in Spider-Man, you see the ultimate version of Iron Lad, Tony Stark, who's like, hey, I found out this is what's happening. You are someone that should have been one of our greatest heroes. If you want to go down that road, the like bioorganic catalyst is contained within. See you in 2 weeks. And then that older version of Peter Parker is like, all right, let's do this. I feel like I'm kind of wanderless. I need to do something.
Something's missing in my life.
So that's where we're at. And Spider-Man and Black Panther is the same kind of thing. Like, it's Black Panther and Storm ruling over Wakanda. And then there's this uprising from like, the Moon Knights.
Hmm. Oh.
It's so like surprising. I'm like, oh hell no, you can't be doing that. I'm picking it up. And then to go into Ultimate X-Men, where it's like, no, it's just like teenage schoolgirl who's being haunted by ghosts, but then like she has this like pink spear protecting her, because this book focuses on armor. Mm-hmm. And it's very much more like teenage schoolgirl drama, like where things are happening at the school and she doesn't know what's going on. Like she's seeing like this weird spear and like her dead classmates in front of her. It's a bizarre book, and I'm just shocked that Marvel's like, no, this is
where we're gonna go
with X-Men in this corner. So it's gonna be going somewhere.
And this Ultimate X-Men is only 4 parts, right?
I'm not sure of how long it's going to be going.
I feel like I saw that it was only 4 parts, but
possibly.
I mean, that bad spirit is the Shadow King, right?
I think so. It's already kind of been spoiled because she's put out some concept artwork that Nico Minoru is going to be another character that's popping up in this book. I love her artwork, so this was kind of like a strong reason for me picking this. We already kind of talked about X-Men Demon Days, because
yeah,
she likes playing in the actual Marvel universe but doing her own thing, and I think this is very much her own kind of thing. But I really dug this. It's beautiful.
And it looks like the next issue is going to focus on Storm,
which would make sense cover, if it's Shadow King.
Because the cover for 2 is a girl with white hair and lightning bolt earrings.
Yeah.
And then it still has those kind of Shadow King kind of creatures in the picture with her. So.
But guys, your thoughts. Because it's a weird book, and I know that.
If this was just like the writer-artist like X-Men book, like we read that other like one shot from her, I would have been like, oh, okay, it's just like a fun like mutant in this world, blah blah blah. But the fact that like it was Ultimate X-Men and this is the first issue I got was bizarre. Like, I think anyone who picked this book up, seeing Ultimate X-Men with them relaunching the Ultimate Universe, would be like, where's Professor X? Where's Cyclops? Where's Wolverine? Where is it all? And it looks like each issue is going to focus on a character that are going to be brought together, or a character that's haunted by the Shadow King for the X-Men to then maybe come in and save and bring them in. I don't know. I enjoyed this story. Just thinking of it as like a coming of age mutant story who is haunted by this. I'm going to keep saying Shadow King because I think it's Shadow King.
I don't think you're wrong.
But it's like, he's already like taken her friend and trying to now get into her head, but she does have the armor that's kind of keeping him away and he's trying to get in there. But yeah, I like the story, but I'm confused in a sense by it being like the launch of the Ultimate X-Men series for Spider-Man, Black Panther, and then, as you said, like what, Ultimate Invasion?
Yeah. I don't think it's next month. I think it's maybe May. They do have Ultimates launching.
Yeah.
So there will be like an actual like Ultimates, like AKA Avengers book coming out too. But I'm just surprised that this is the route that they went. And I think that's part of why I enjoyed this book so much, because I'm like, no, it's so different from everything else that there has to be something in here or where it's going that they're like, no, like this is the direction we're taking. And that's what makes me excited for it.
Yeah, it's definitely a great X-Men Demon Days number 2. It's great. Is that like you guys are saying, it's as Ultimate X-Men number 1, it's definitely a hard left from what you were expecting. But then the cover is kind of telling you everything you need to know. Like, it's armor. which is a character that I don't really know, but I play her in the
She was in the Astonishing X-Men. Yeah. She was there. Like
she was there. Saw her in creation. Background.
That was like her first appearance. Oh. It's all in there.
You know, she's there in Snap.
I do love her in Snap. I get it. Maybe Paul, this is a little bit too out there for him. Mm-hmm. Maybe he just needs to kind of go back to basics.
Yeah. You know, back to like 1990, 1997, 1992 maybe?
No, that's too early.
You know, but that's the
sweet
start
spot.
Of it.
Hit the sweet spot.
Oh, 1997.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. This is I have not watched any of the new cartoons.
That was going to be show. My main question.
But this is the prelude to the new cartoon show of X-Men 97 now on Disney Plus. This is X-Men 97 number one, written by Steve Fox. I'm not sure who did the art, but whoever did the art.
By Salva Espin.
They did a great job aping the style of the cartoon series. And we see that Scott Summers, Cyclops, is desperately trying to hold the X-Men team together and kind of take charge and leadership of not only the X-Men, but the figurehead of all mutants striving for peace. Now that Charles Xavier has passed, sacrificed himself. And it seems to be working because it seems like the government is stepping up, but are they? And we get a lot of great cartoon fighting in the danger room, basically. John, I feel like you were nonplussed by this book.
I didn't like this book.
Have you watched X-Men 97?
I watched the first episode.
Okay.
And I liked the first episode. There was definitely cool things in the first episode. Like, I really liked how in that beginning, like, not to talk about the cartoon, but like in that first...
I mean, this is like a counterpart to it, yeah. So I think it's fair.
But like in that cartoon, like that opening scene... where like Cyclops is like fighting in there and how they're having Cyclops use his power to actually like push him backwards, stop a kick coming, do all that. I really liked this book. I found annoying and I found the different things. There's different things in this book that I thought were really stupid. I thought it was really stupid that Bishop had a change for the concert. Mm-hmm. That Storm also like got a new haircut and got an outfit and was like, oh, I did this to go to the concert. And then she's like, oh, Bishop can have my ticket to the concert. And then Bishop had to get out of his costume and into a suit. Mm-hmm. But nobody else changed out of their costumes to go there. Jubilee's in her costume. You see Gambit and Rogue in a suit.
But
you see Gambit and Rogue in a store shopping to get new clothes to go to the concert.
But
they go to the concert in costume as well.
Because they got interrupted and had to go save Dazzler.
They still have clothes at home.
Yeah, but they left right from saving Dazzler to go to the VIP thing. They were not late.
Costumes was only there for a joke for Gambit to hold up the costume that Rogue wore like in the 80s with the green shirt and the thing. The like Wolverine like in the danger room, like, come on, let's work together. And then Cyclops coming in and shooting him in the back and then coming in to be like, sorry, honey, what did you want to tell me? And he's like wiping himself down with a towel and then sad Wolverine hiding behind the door to hear Jean Grey's pregnant. Like, there's just a lot of stuff in this book that I was like, this is fucking stupid. And I felt that way throughout the whole book. But those are two big things that I was like, ugh.
Wolverine was calling him out and said, come on, stop messing with these robots and things and let's actually fight it out. If you're going to be the leader, then come show fight me what you
and
got.
And then Cyclops shoots him in the back?
No. He shoots him and Wolverine, like, spins around. As he's getting shot.
No, he shoots him. It looks like he's shooting him in the back.
I think him in the back. He gets spun.
No, it's Wolverine talking like, no, we're going to do this. We got to do this. And then Cyclops opens the door. He's like, all right, you want to All right, Logan, you want to
go?
Why
is he turned around? Why isn't he facing the door then? I don't get that. No, I see what you're saying. His shoulders turned.
Yeah, he's in the simulation. Then Cyclops comes in, is like, "All right, you want to do this? Fuck you!" And like shoots him in the back.
All right, Logan, you want to go? He steps in. The door closes. Wolverine has plenty of time to turn around.
Paul. Okay, so Paul's making excuses. He's an apologist.
Yep, I'm a psychopologist.
So my question for you, John, like, but watching the first episode, do you see how this is just kind of table setting to answer the questions of like, oh, if like you're watching the show, well, why did Storm cut her hair like she did to go to the Dazzler concert? Like, this book is very inconsequential, but it's there to answer those questions of like, oh, why is it like this for the cartoon that's now airing on Disney Plus? It's synergy. It's synergy. And
synergy. It's a waste of my $4.99.
I'm going to throw this out there.
I think the book looks good. It looks great.
Like the cartoon.
I think it's poorly written.
I think it's written as well as a comic book tie-in for a cartoon should be written. Because, boys, I don't know if anyone else ever had issues of X-Men Adventures bought for them, because I did. As someone who was a X-Men fan in the 90s, it was commonplace for me to get X-Men Adventures comic books from my mom or my grandmother because they knew I liked X-Men. And X-Men Adventures were basically X-Men comics that took place in the cartoon universe.
Yes.
Like continuity, so it was.
I feel like
very
I got
much,
those from like Burger King, or it was like.
I would not be surprised if they had like some sort of like collaboration, because it was very much X-Men in that same vein, where it's oh, everyone has guns, but we're gonna use the lasers instead. Wolverine has his claws. He's not gonna slice and dice you. He's gonna cut the fire hydrant, which is gonna splash you away.
Yeah,
this reminded me of that. And as soon as I started reading it, I was kind of back into that mind frame. So everything that you have as an issue, yes, I see that. But I'm reading this through that viewpoint where it's like, no, this is the comic book tie-in for a cartoon made for kids. So it's not going to be great. It's not going to be good, because I feel like it's dumbed down, and I don't think it should be, because I'm not reading this as a kid who's watching a cartoon. I'm reading it as a 41-year-old adult who has the nostalgia for this property, who will be watching the upcoming cartoon based off of the cartoon. So it's not great, but I think it does do a good job of fitting into that weird, hyper-specific mold. That's like, oh, okay, this is maybe going to answer some of those questions. Like, why is this for the cartoon? Because, again, I talked about this when they put out the trailer for X-Men 97. I was nervous. I could not go back and rewatch that now because the cartoon is very dated. I think the cartoon's great. I highly recommend continuing on, John. It's kind of what I feel like it should be, but
it should be better.
I'm not going to read anymore, but yeah, it should be better.
But Valerie Cooper's in it.
Yeah, Valerie Cooper's in it. And they already explained to me who Valerie Cooper is in that first episode of the cartoon, because again, I did not circle back on the cartoon because it's grossly dated at this point.
But Valerie Cooper was an X-Factor back when I first started reading X-Factor. She was the government liaison for X-Factor.
And that's great. Like,
what a great character is.
This comic should have been better, though.
Yeah.
And I'm middle of the road on it. Like, I'm defending it, and I'm still not. I don't want anyone to think that I'm like.
I don't want anyone to think I like this book.
I don't want anyone to think like I'm saying like this is my pick for the month.
I had a bad month of comics. That's all.
It happens. The cartoon's great though, guys. Like I've watched the three episodes that have come out. I've gone back and rewatched them with Yanni so she could see it, and I think it's doing what I was afraid it wasn't going to, because I was like, eh, this could go the wrong way, but it's leaning into that nostalgia, but it's also ramped up for more like mature audience. This comic hasn't done that though.
The only other comic I read this month was Wonder Woman number 7. The what do you get Batman for his birthday? And it was basically Superman and Wonder Woman just at a galactic mall, going to store, being like, and that was pretty boring.
Yeah, this is Paul. This is fine to pick. Sometimes you pick books, in a sense, almost purposely for being what it is. This is the tie-in book to the cartoon that is coming out, and that cartoon, that first episode, didn't feel like it was made to be for a new generation. It feels like it was made to be for the adults who watched that cartoon.
It shouldn't be its own selection. It should just be the next season of the X-Men animated series.
Yeah.
Like, you should have to, like, purposely select season, like, what, 7?
But it feels like it's made for, and it's like, the thing is, like, in the thing that, there's a guy who's older than me, a few years older than me, that I work with, and I was like, he loves that X-Men cartoon, and he's the guy that he tells me, like, if they're gonna make Wolverine, the new Wolverine shouldn't be an actor. He should be CGI, because nobody can be as squat and hunched over and Wolverine as a real person. And I was like, yeah, that doesn't work. Like, I don't want to see that. I'd rather see.
He's thinking of Puck.
I get what he's saying, and like,
yes,
I understand, but
I understand, but it's like, that's never gonna happen. But when I showed him the trailer for the X-Men 97, he was like, he walked away from me, the scene where Gambit charged his skeleton, like the claws, he walked away, and he's like, I don't understand, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen, but how does that work? Is his skeleton gonna explode? Like, he's got all these questions, super excited about the show starting, but like, Gambit charging those claws, the fight scene in the beginning with Cyclops and how he's using his optic beams to do that.
I think that is the best use of Cyclops.
Cyclops ever.
In any media.
Yes.
Anything ever. Ever. Where it's like using it to like spin around and like kick people. Like, it's fucking so awesome.
It's so good. But that's the thing I'm trying to say is, like, the cartoon is for 40-year-olds. Yeah. It's for people who watched that original cartoon who are now excited that they're bringing that cartoon back, and they're doing cool shit to make people like the 40-year-olds go, I have to walk away. Gambit's doing the skeleton. Cyclops is using it to like move himself on the battlefield. He's sliding away to shoot this guy to do this. And then, Paul, not to ruin it for you, but like, they pull his visor off and he's like, oh no, you can't do that. Psych. And then just opens his eyes and blows everybody up. Like, it's cool shit. And this comic book
doesn't do cool shit.
It's not cool shit. It's fucking boring.
It's like, oh, we got to save Dazzler.
Yeah. It's got to save Dazzler. And Dazzler seems like an asshole.
And Dazzler hasn't been updated at all.
Second rate. The only thing they changed is their hair color. And then second rate crap villains show up. And then Mr. Sinister's like, I don't know why I sent you guys. I need to get better guys. And then the better guys that they show are all crap guys except for Sabretooth. So I'm like, I don't care.
I will say, going back and reading this after watching the first 3 episodes of the cartoon, though, I'm like, oh, they're just giving away that Mr. Sinister is going to be the big villain. For the season.
Yeah.
Even though he's in the like the opening credits for us, they can maybe be like, oh, like why are they showing Mr. Sinister? Maybe no, the comic's just like, oh, because he literally says like, ah, the child that they are growing is key to my plans. It's like, oh, that's okay.
Yep. And then like their thing for the next like episode, it has like the checkerboard and it has like the neon squiggly lines and it's like Sabretooth attacking Wolverine. But like in the new Wolverine series that's going on right now, the cover is Wolverine like screaming and Sabretooth doing like shock therapy on his skull. And it's like, well, if you're going to have a team up with these guys, do I want to read this shitty comic book or do I want to check out what the hell's going on in Wolverine? I want to check out what's going on in Wolverine over this book. This book is a disservice to...
All right.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's fine, guys. It's
I really hate it.
It wasn't my favorite book. It's not my favorite book of the year.
Well, Paul.
You know, it's not what, like...
Paul, I understand, like, I've picked plenty over the 13 years that we've done this. Mm-hmm. I've picked plenty of bad books that it's like, oh, that's a John book. Like, trust me. I'm not.
Yeah.
I think your pick of picking this book with the fact that the new series started, perfect pick. But it's a bad. It's not your fault that it's a bad book.
It's a bad book.
And
not great.
I've picked plenty of bad books. I'm not trying to poo-poo
on
you.
It's still sadly my favorite book of the three that we read.
What?
Because I did not like any of the three. I didn't like any of these books. I just had no interest in any of them. I'm not going to pick up any of these three books after this first issue. You'll have to tell me that one of these two books, the other two books, like become like so good for me to even be interested in picking up another one of them.
I'm going to do a Paul thing where I'm going to like Ultimate X-Men. I see it as multiple issues of Shadow King trying to take these mutants who don't know they're mutants yet until like the X-Men or somebody show up to help those kids or save those kids. Or the reason the X-Men are formed is to I need you, like Charles Xavier being like, I need you to help me help these kids, and brings in Cyclops and all these characters to battle Shadow King.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that idea. I like its trauma with children. Like, I like that. I think that's good. I mean, Helen of Windhorn is like a John book if there was ever a John book. One, it's my boy, John. Tom King.
We'll do a power ranking. So, John, is your number one?
It's Helen of Windhorn.
Okay.
My number two is definitely Ultimate X-Men because I kind of foresee what's happening, and it's wild. It is wild that it is a launch of
it. It has Ultimate. To be something.
It's the launch of the Ultimate X-Men, and it's a traumatic story with the girl with the, you know, armor. And like number three, it's number three, but it would be left off the list if I could.
Okay.
Like so, I deeply disliked this book.
So Paul, you already said X-Men 97 is your number one. And I do want to circle back because for your picks for the list, you did have like Power Girl, two issues of Action Comics, and Superman, books that we had already read and were like, no, this is good, this is interesting. Did you pick any of those books up?
I thought I had Wonder Woman on there.
I don't think that
Wonder Woman number seven.
I don't think that was one of your. Oh, that was your pick for last week. Yes.
Yeah, that's the one that I picked up. That was the out of the other ones. I didn't pick up the two Action Comics, I guess. No, I didn't, because I'm looking at it right now. The last World Finest I picked up was 24, issue 24.
World's Finest is great. Also had like Action Comics like 1062, 1063, Power Girl number six. So books that you actually read.
He didn't remember that he picked those.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't go back and look at our Instagram to see what books did I pick this month? Swipe, swipe, swipe. Oh, maybe I should pick that book.
I'll pick. Well, normally I'll then go back and actually pick those up and read them and then pick. But this week, it was John yesterday saying, Paul, what's your book? And I'm like, oh, shoot.
So what's your number two then?
My number two would be Helena Windhorn. Because I sworn we read something very similar to this. Like, apparently it was not recently, but...
We might have. But I don't remember.
I'm trying to think of, like...
Was Luther Strode the...
Strode was a guy that gained powers from, like, the back of a comic book.
Oh, thing. Okay, never mind. There was something where this girl goes to write a guy's autobiography, and he's, like, close to death.
What is the book? Chris.
And then he's, like, not... And then it all turns out to be true, like, all his adventures. Like,
I'm never going to be able to find the book. But, yes, I picked up that series for a while. Chris, it was the one where the old guy... Oh, jeez, I'm never
going to... I need something to go on. Because if you give me something, guy. I can probably Woman. Pull it out.
Writer. Autobiography.
It was my favorite book of the one year of the year.
Yeah. I felt like... So I'm like, oh, I've read this book already.
But it is... Paul, I would say it is close to what you just said. But this... Yes and no.
I'm like, is this a weird trope now? Is this a thing?
I think it might be.
And then Ultimate X-Men number one, just because I'm not that big of a fan of Peach.
Deathbed. Oh, okay. I vaguely remember that book.
Okay. But you know what? We don't need to vaguely remember, listeners. We don't need to vaguely remember to like us and review us.
I need to give my top three. I was doing the sign to say like, okay, hey, fill space.
We'll vamp to fill up space. But honestly... if I picked Wonder Woman number seven,
he had to leave to go to the bathroom. He couldn't just say like, Helen's my favorite, then my X-Men, and then this.
But Wonder Woman number seven was also written by Tom King, so that would have been two Tom Kings.
Does Chris have a fur coat on the back of his thing? Is he wearing fur coats now?
It's his Wookiee coat when he wants to go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you just saying that, or you know that for a fact?
No, I'm pretty sure he's mentioned it before. Much like Deathbed is much like Helen of Windhorn. And Wonder Woman number seven, they were just at a mall.
Oh, it sounds awful. It sounds awful. I'm glad you didn't pick it.
It was pretty rough. It wasn't bad, because it is a fun character story between like Superman and Wonder Woman just talking about Batman the whole time.
Remember when you picked
Date Night?
No, you picked
Date Night. The one where it was Batman and Superman and Lois Lane and Catwoman, that was and a they good go one. In and they went to the carnival.
You picked that and we thought we were going to hate it, but we loved it. But it was also the thing where you picked you originally picked a Sabrina book and then switched over, and then Chris and I both read the Sabrina book and then had to read the other book, and we're like, no, you should have picked the Sabrina book.
Well, I was reading the Sabrina book, and I'm like, ooh, this is way too wordy for
and
them.
You're like,
to,
they're like, going to hate that.
They're going to hate it. And then you guys loved it, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Chris, what's up with the fur coat behind you?
Oh, that's it's just a fleece jacket that I bought when actually Paul and Kate were down here. It was like 40 degrees walking around Disney Springs, and I was wearing like shorts and a t-shirt, and I was like, I'm going to buy a jacket. So it's literally just been slung over my chair since then.
But isn't it your Chewbacca shirt? Didn't we say that? It was like your Wookiee.
Yes. It's super plush, super warm. But my book lineup, I'm actually going Helena Windhorn number one.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful artwork.
Like, it looks amazing. Like,
I already said on here what I think your picks are. So I'm so right
that,
so far.
That was my number one. What's my number two?
It's Ultimate X-Men.
Okay. Yes. And why?
Because it's one of your favorite artists, and you really like the story. And
of where it can go. Like,
yeah, exactly. The same thing I said.
It has to go somewhere, and if it doesn't, I'm going to be very let down. But Ultimate Spider-Man, I loved it. Like, holy crap, Jonathan Hickman knocked it out of the park. And then X-Men 97.
Oh, it's
because,
Jonathan Hickman. Paul, you'd love that book.
It's Spider-Man, though. I'm not a big fan of Spider-Man.
It's middle-aged Spider-Man, married with kids, thinking like, oh, I could be doing something else out there. And then being told like, no, you should
not
be doing
kids
something. You should be doing something else out there. And then him being like, I'm going to fucking go do something else out there. I bought issue number 3 because that came out. Issue number 2, not on my shelf. So I let my comic book store like, no, like, hey, if there's another printing of this, if you get in like a variant cover of it, I want that book. Like I've added all of these books to my pull list because I'm in on the Ultimates now. Hopefully, listener, you are in on us. If there's a book that we didn't talk about that you think we should have read, let us know. Email us over at bangedboardcast@gmail.com. If you want to say, hey, fuck you, Paul, for cutting off Chris before he got to do his power rankings, let him know. Comment on any of the social media posts. Or if we're wrong, hey, maybe X-Men 97 was the best book and there's something we missed.
It was.
Wait a second. But did John ever say the book that he's looking forward to in the list?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
So I'm looking forward to Godzilla versus the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Oh, two?
Like, wait a second.
Two.
But
number
but did,
one.
Did you guys watch the documentary over on about Nickelodeon?
I mean, we could just let this run because we've had so many just our personal conversations on this pod. We missed 1 week and we act like we haven't recorded in like a month.
But this still isn't like the longest episode we've done.
No. Nope.